ಗೋಪೀಜನ ವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ This morning we are studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 12, verse number 21. Okay. Actually, before I start the verse, Jadvika Maharaj gave class, the last class, Srimad Bhagavatam. So the question had come up about why the sons, any of the sons, not able to qualify to take on the throne. How come that Maharaj Parikshit was the last heir to the throne that was living? And so Jayavika Maharaj discussed with Hridayananda Maharaj, and Hridayananda Maharaj suggested that if, and I'm reading from Jayavika Maharaj's email, Hridayananda Maharaj suggested that if other sons were still living, there must have been something about their status that disqualified them from succeeding to the throne. In the case of Bhabru Bahan, we find in the Bhagavatam 9:22-32, Manipura Pate Sopi Tat Putra Putrika Sutaha. Although he was the son of Arjun, he became the adopted son of his maternal grandfather, the king of Manipur. So with all the ins and outs of dharma, that may have been enough to disqualify him from succession to the throne of Hastinapur. Just as Dhritarashtra, Vidura, and Pandu were biological sons of Vyas, but were accepted as the sons of Vichitravirya and Babruvahan. No, Vichitravirya. Babruvahan became the son of the king of Manipur. So that was an explanation that was given as far as how is that Maharaj Pariksit was the only heir left. Okay. So we're going to say the same verse as on Friday. Dhanvinam agranirecha tulyascharjunayo dvayo Hutasha iva dudharsha Samudra iva dustara. Please chant. Great bowman, Agrani, the foreman, Esha, this child, Tulya, equally good, Cha, and Arjunayo, of the Arjunas, Dvayo, of the two, Putasha, fire, Iva, life, Durdharsha, irresistible, Samudraha, ocean, Iva, life, Dustara, unsurpassable. translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Amongst great bowmen, this child will be as good as Arjun. He will be irresistible as the fire and as unsurpassable as the ocean. So Maharaj had read part of the purport, and I'll read the second part of the purport, starting from when Maharaj Yudhishthir. When Maharaj Yudhishthir was disappointed in defeating the king of Magad, Jarasandha, it was Arjun only who gave King Yudhishthir all the king's kinds of assurances, and thus Arjun, Bhima, and Lord Krishna started for Magad to kill Jarasandha. When he went out to bring all other kings of the world under the subjection of the Pandavas, as was usual after the coronation of every emperor, he conquered the country named Kalinda and brought in subjugation King Bhagadatta. Then he traveled through countries like Antagiri, Ulukapura, Modapura, and brought under subjugation all the other rulers, all the rulers. So you see in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is glorifying Arjun, since Maharaj Parikshit is compared that he would be as good as a bowman as Arjun's. So that's what Srila Prabhupada is. We'll be hearing about Arjun's glories, his activities. Sometimes he underwent severe types of penances, and later on he was rewarded by Indradev. Lord Shiva also wanted to try the strength of Arjun, and in the form of an aborigine, Lord Shiva met him. There was a great fight between the two, and at last Lord Shiva was satisfied with him and disclosed his identity. Arjun prayed to the Lord in all humbleness, and the Lord, being pleased with him, presented him the Pashupat weapon. He acquired many other important weapons from different demigods. He received Dandastra from Yamaraj, Pashastra from Varuna, and Antardhanastra from Kubera, the treasurer of the heavenly kingdom. Indra wanted him to come to the heavenly kingdom, the Indraloka planet beyond the moon planet. In that planet, he was cordially received by the local residents, and he was awarded reception in the heavenly parliament of Indradev. I like the usages Prabhupada uses, heavenly parliament of Indradev. Then he met Indradev, who not only presented him with Vajra weapon, but also taught him the military and musical science as used in the heavenly planet. In one sense, Indra is the real father of Arjun. And therefore, so that's interesting, we just heard about, Maharaj was talking about, you know, who is considered who, and so we know Arjun is the son of Pandu, but he's actually the son of Indra. So he's Indra's real father, but Pandu is considered as the son of, the father of Arjun. So one of those things here. So in one sense, Indra is the real father of Arjun, and therefore indirectly he wanted to entertain Arjun with the famous society girl of heaven, Urvashi, the celebrated beauty. So I guess the father wants to entertain his son. The society girls of heaven are lusty, and Urvashi was very eager to contact Arjun, the strongest human being. She met him in his room and expressed her desires. But Arjun sustained his unimpeachable character by closing his eyes before Urvashi, addressing her as mother of the Kuru dynasty, and placing her in the category of his mothers Kunti, Madri, and Shachidevi, wife of Indradev. Disappointed, Urvashi cursed Arjun and left. In the heavenly planet, he also met the great celebrated ascetic Lomasha and prayed to him for the protection of Maharaj Yudhishthir. So we're hearing a lot of Mahabharata here. I think so. Okay. Yeah, his curse. Yeah, the curse was that he had to become a, what's that word called? A eunuch in the material world, And it came to his advantage because they had to, the Pandavas had to live 1 year incognito, and so nobody could recognize him. He was, you know, he was a dance teacher, yeah. I don't know, the same thing as, it's not a transgender, it's just no gender or whatever. Whatever gender, I guess. Yeah, so that was happening even that time. People have, actually talking about that, in India, people who are born like that, they are considered a special category. At least we call them, from where I come, they call them hijras. Hijra. In Bengali too? Hijra. And so they know, it's interesting, they know when somebody is born with no gender, or both genders, or however it is. And so they get that child in their community, and the way they make a living is they go to houses and they do singing and whatever, and they get money. Don't know exactly how it's done, but that's, huh?
They do parties.
Parties, yeah. And that's how they earn their living. So their social welfare system like that. They're dressed like women. You can see, when you look at them, they're kind of like male, but they're dressed as female. Yeah, yeah, something. Yeah. Yeah. Or feminine male. Hare Krishna, whatever. Okay. With his inimical cousin, Duryodhan was under the clutches of Gandharvas. He wanted to save him and requested the Gandharvas to release Duryodhan. But the Gandharvas refused, and thus he fought with them and got Duryodhan released. What a shameful situation for Duryodhan, because Duryodhan wanted to attack the Pandavas, and then the Pandavas themselves actually save Duryodhan and their party. Anyway, when all the Pandavas lived incognito, he presented himself in the court of King Virat as a eunuch. Here it says, okay, and was employed as the musical teacher of Uttara, his future daughter-in-law, and was known in the Virat court as Brihanalla. As Brihanalla, he fought on behalf of Uttara, the son of King Virata, and thus defeated the Kurus in the fight incognito. His secret weapons were safely kept in the custody of a somi tree, and he ordered Uttara to get them back. His identity and his brother's identity were later on disclosed to Uttara. Dronacharya was informed of Arjuna's presence in the fight of the Kurus and the Viratas. Later on the battlefield Kurukshetra, Arjuna killed many great generals like Karna and others. After the battle of Kurukshetra, he punished Ashwatthama, who had killed all the five sons of Draupadi. Then all the brothers went to Bhishma Dev. I mean, I can't help but remember the Mahabharata in this whole the scene of that. I don't know if everybody saw here Mahabharata, but actually it's worth seeing that those series. They're really, according to me, they're well done. It is due to Arjuna only that the great philosophical discourses of Bhagavad Gita were again spoken by the Lord on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. His wonderful acts on the battlefield of Kurukshetra are vividly described in the Mahabharata. Arjuna was defeated, however, by his son Babruvahan at Manipur and fell unconscious when Ulupi saved him. After the disappearance of Lord Krishna, the message was brought by Arjun to Maharaj Yudhishthira. Again, Arjun visited Dwaraka, and all the widow wives of Lord Krishna lamented before him. He took them all in the presence of Vasudev and pacified all of them. Later on, when Vasudev passed away, Arjun, he performed his funeral ceremony in the absence of Krishna. It's amazing, eh? While Arjun was taking all the wives of Krishna to Indraprastha, he was attacked on the way, and he could not protect the ladies in his custody. At last, advised by Vyasadev, all the brothers headed for Mahaprasthana. On the way, at the request of his brother, he gave up all important weapons as useless, and he dropped them all in the water. a real nice bag if you have Arjun here. Nama Om Shibadaya Krishna Krishna Abhutalishma Kedanta Samadhanam Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachayam Nirvati Shashuni Vati Pachayam Nirvati Bancha Kalpatul Vastati Pasam Vivi Jati Pranam Pabam Vyo Vashyam Vashyam So, in this chapter, a few verses, Yudhishthira Maharaj was asking a question. And his question was, he had concern whether Maharaj Parikshit was going to be a fit ruler for the kingdom. And like Hridayananda Maharaj explained very nicely when he gave class last week or the week before, I forget, about why it was so important for Maharaj Yudhishthira to make sure that the heir to the throne was going to be qualified. It's kind of as I thought about how Srila Prabhupada had kind of the same anxiety, who is going to take care of his movement. Especially because even when Bhaktisiddhanta was concerned who would take care of things, and he had a GBC body and it didn't really work. And so Srila Prabhupada rightfully was feeling concerned about how would things go on. So he wanted to make sure that that is taken care of. So it's a natural thing. There's a kingdom and he was concerned. And so here in the last few verses and the next few verses, the astrologers, the brahmanas, are telling Yudhishthira Maharaj that Maharaj Parikshit will be a good ruler. And so he's comparing, he's telling about his qualities, and I'll mention some of the qualities that he says. Start off with maintaining all those who are born. He will be true to his promise. He'll be a munificent donor. He will be a great bowman. That's what we're hearing in this verse today. He'll be as tolerant as his parents. He'll have equanimity of mind. He'll be munificent. He'll be a resort for everyone. He will be the resort of everyone. He'll be magnanimous. He will follow dharma. He'll be patient. So these are the qualities that the brahmanas are telling about our child Maharaj Parikshit, who is a little child right now. And so these are the qualities of a Kshatriya. And I thought, let me just check these qualities and look at the qualities that are given in Bhagavad Gita that Lord Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, the qualities of a Kshatriya. Kshariyam tejo dhitrik dakshyam yuddhe chapya palayanam danam ishwaram bhavascha kshatram karma svabhavajam. So, he says, heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity, and leadership are the natural qualities of work for the Kshatriyas. So we see some of the qualities are there, but some of the other qualities are in the qualities that describe the brahmanas. Shamo damas tapashacham shantir arjavam evacha jnanam vijnanam astikyam brahma karma svabhavajam. And the qualities there are peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, and religiousness. So these are the qualities by what the brahmanas work. So we can see that both those qualities, from both those list of qualities, the brahmanas are saying that Maharaj Parikshit will have. The qualities that I thought was that fit in some of the qualities that are mentioned, they go under Ishwara Bhava. Ishvara Bhava, that's a very very important word, two words. Bhava means feel, one's feeling, emotional or conception. Feel, you're feeling a certain way. And Ishvara means controller. So the Kshatriyas have Ishvara Bhava. Yeah? Ishvara Bhava. I'm feeling like wanting to control or having that sense of controlling. Now let's see what the Ishvara Bhava, what it does, the real Ishvara Bhava, how does it manifest? In maintaining all those who are born. So that was the one of the qualities the learned Brahmins said. They said was that he will be exactly like King Ikshvaku in maintaining all those who are born. So that's what Ishvara Bhava is. It will manifest in wanting to maintain those who are under you. You need that Ishvara Bhava. You need that sense of feeling like controlling things, having things under your control to maintain those who are taking shelter of you. Another thought that, another quality it said here was he will be munificent. Munificent is also, it means a benefactor. It means somebody who is selfless. It again shows the quality of an Ishvara Bhava, one who wants to be a benefactor of others, one who wants to selflessly do something for others. That comes under the quality of Ishvara Bhava. So these are some of the things about Ishvara Bhava. What is Ishvara Bhava? It almost seemed like a negative thing, but no, it is something that is needed. If you look here, when Yudhishthira Maharaj inquired, and so that's what the topic today is about, Ishvara Bhava. Since we're talking about Kshatriyas and their qualities, so here Yudhishthira Maharaj, earlier on in text 18, he inquired, he said, "O great souls, will he become as saintly a king, as pious in his very name?" And then he says, "And as famous and glorified in his achievements as others who appeared in this great royal family." So if you look at the question that Yudhishthira Maharaj is putting forth in front of the brahmanas, again you kind of sense that Ishvara Bhava here. Will he be as famous? Fame is something that, you know, a feeling of greatness, a feeling of Ishvara. And will he be as famous and glorified in his achievements as others who appeared in this great royal family? So again, this great royal family. Again, that is expressing about the greatness of the family that Yudhishthira Maharaj is of, and he wanted to make sure that King Parikshit is going to be as glorious and will be glorified in this great royal family. And he further says, "And will he expand the name and fame of his family?" There's so much about name and fame in the Kshatriya life, seems like. Name and fame. Will he expand the name and fame of his family, like Bharat Maharaj? And we do see that Maharaj Parikshit, later on we will read, that Maharaj Parikshit, he, like Arjun, like described here, that amongst great bowmen, this child will be as good as Arjun. So Maharaj Parikshit does go on his chariot, drawn by black horses, and he's decorated and surrounded by charioteers and elephants and infantry soldiers, etc. to conquer, he left the capital to conquer in all directions. So Maharaj Parikshit does follow in the footsteps of Arjun, but further on described that wherever the king visited, he continuously heard the glories of his great forefathers. So hearing the glories of great forefathers, in his case they were all great devotees, was something that is very important, it seems like, that has been described by Sutta Goswami. And further on we hear that the king is very pleased when he hears such glories. He says that he opened his eyes in great satisfaction, and out of magnanimity he was pleased to award them very valuable necklaces and clothing. So when you're pleased, you want to give in charity. Again, that's the sense of hearing glories of your dynasty, hearing glories of yourself, and then giving in charity. Not just the forefathers, but also of oneself, what you have done. We see that in the 10th canto, when Lord Krishna, after he defeated Jarasandha, and he came back to Mathura, it describes that the people of Mathura, relieved of their feverish anxiety and filled with joy, came out to meet him as professional bards, heralds, and panegyrists. I had to look that how to pronounce it and what it means. Basically, people who praise, eulogize. Anyway. Sang in praise of his victory. So there are three words in Sanskrit that are normally used that are there for these people who sing glories of what you have done. And they're called Suta, Magadhas, and Bandis. The Sutas are their heritage, so to speak. They're born from a Kshatriya father and a Brahmana wife. Pratilom marriage, and the Magadhas are born from a Vaishya father and a Kshatriya wife, again because of a Pratiloma marriage, like higher, and the wife being higher than the husband. And the Vandis, I couldn't find what the Vandis, what their heritage is, but these are professional people who actually glorify the leaders, the kings, of their activities and glorify what their ancestors have done. Again, but in various ways, it describes in the 10th canto, in the 90th chapter, which is the last chapter, that professional writers known as Suta, Magadhas, and Vandis played veenas and recited poems praising Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna would play with his wives in the water. So Lord Krishna, as he's playing and having fun with his waters, in the water with his wives, what's happening? The Sutas, the Magadhas, the Vandis, they're playing on the veenas and they're praising him and they're, you know, sending prayers. And so this is all part of the Kshatriya culture, But is this just like, is this something that is fanning their ego? In one sense, one may see that it's fanning their ego, which is kind of needed. But it is not false. And we see that Prithu Maharaj, we see in Prithu Maharaj's pastime, he was just being enthroned on the throne, and they're just doing the coronation, and the same people, the Suta, Magadhas, and the Vandis, they come and they started glorifying Prithu Maharaj. And Prithu Maharaj said, he was like, okay, listen, thank you very much for doing so. I mean, he was very, it's described that he smiled at these people. But then he became very grave, and he said, how is that you're offering such prayers to me now when I have not really done anything? I have not shown anything. He describes that as, he says, praising a man by saying that if he were educated, he might have become a great scholar or great personality is nothing but a process of cheating. So you're saying that I haven't done anything and you're praising me is actually cheating. So in one sense, you could see that Maharaj Parikshit, they're not really praising Maharaj Parikshit, but yet they are praising Maharaj Parikshit that he will be doing that. But it's a different situation there. Here, Maharaj Prithu is saying that I haven't done anything, so please don't praise me. Then another thing he says, he said, yeah, you can offer such prayers in due course of time when I actually manifest them. And he also says, how could an intelligent man, competent enough to possess such exalted qualities, in other words, if a person actually had such good qualities, how would he allow his followers to praise him if he did not actually have them? That's interesting. How could an intelligent man, competent enough to possess such qualities, allow his followers to praise him if he did not actually have them? So when we're not talking about Ishwara Bhava, it's not a false thing, because real Rajarshis would not allow such things to be said to them unless they were qualified. And yet these things, in the culture of the Kshatriyas, these things were there, not just Kshatriya, with any leaders. Even I saw the Nanda Maharaj when something, I didn't really read it, but basically they were same Sutta Magadhas and Bandis also praising on a special occasion doing that. I guess like we were earlier talking about the Hijras, they go and do a song and a dance when there's some occasion. But just in contrast, just wanted to mention about Vena. How can you not talk about Vena? Vena was different in the sense that he wanted the brahmanas, he wanted everybody to glorify him, and using philosophy, so to speak, or the culture of Kshatriyas, and saying that you people should be worshipping me. O Brahmanas, you should abandon your envy of me, and by your ritualistic activities, you should worship me and offer me all paraphernalia. And so that was his Ishwara Bhava is not Ishwara Bhava, it's Ishwaraham Aham Bhogi. So it is the same word, Ishwara Bhava and Ishwaraham, that's the verse that we know, demonic qualities. But it's very different, Ishwara Bhava and the quality of a demon. So when, with Ishwara Bhava, what really comes with Ishwara Bhava is humility and responsibility. Those are the two qualities. If one actually has true Ishwara Bhava, that's what will be a byproduct of it. Just like we understand about knowledge, yeah? The byproduct of knowledge is humility. And if you have knowledge and you're proud of your knowledge, that means you have no knowledge. So if there's Ishwara Bhava, humility has to come. And if there's no humility, then you're Ishwaraham Aham Bhogi, Siddhoham Balavan Sukhi, I'm the enjoyer, I'm this, I'm strong, I'm that. If you actually look at that verse of the demonic quality, there is, I will give in sacrifice, I'll give in charity. Dakshe, what is that? Dakshe Yasyami. I'll give, I'll perform sacrifice and I will give in charity. What do the kings do? We just heard, they give in charity. They perform sacrifices. So if you look at those qualities, the kings do that. So, but the real difference is aham, the ego is there. The humility is not there. And you're the center. Whereas in the Ishwar Bhava, there is, you're feeling that, you're feeling humbled. It describes that Maharaj Parikshit, out of his devotional humility, this is when he met Shukadeva Goswami, and to hear from him, and describes, I think this is in the purport that Prabhupada says, Maharaj Parikshit, out of his devotional humility, felt himself an unworthy descendant of his great Kshatriya forefathers, although he was as great as his predecessors. So you're looking at your great lineage and you're thinking, wow, this is such a great lineage I have, I come from, and you feel humbled. And you feel like, wow, I want to be like them. And so you want to take the responsibility on your shoulders on their behalf. And that's what Ishwara Bhava does. And that's, you also see that same thing in Srila Prabhupada. He felt great pride in being a disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He would say he was a Vaikuntha man. So was he being proud? No, he felt great pride, a sense of pride where you feel like, oh, my spiritual master is such a great person. Oh, the lineage that we come is so great. Look at all the great people that we have in our lineage. You know, Srila Bhakti, Srila Prabhupada for ourselves, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Narottam Das Thakur, and the Goswamis, and Lord Chaitanya, and Madhavendra Puri. I mean, all these great personalities, Lord Brahma. You feel humbled that, oh my God, we've got such a great lineage, and so you feel like you want to offer something. They have given us so much. So this is what we saw in Srila Prabhupada, that it brought humility. He was always feeling humble when expressing about Bhaktisiddhanta and our great lineage that we have. And so this is what this is we as being a receiver of such great lineage by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, that we're connected, and by his followers, that we're connected to such a great lineage, we can feel pride, have a sense of pride. It's not, you know, like you have those national anthems. I know, I mean, even now I think about, you know, on the 26th of January, we, or no, 15th of August, they sing for India, they have the national anthem. I'm an American citizen, but I don't know the national anthem of America, but of India I know, you know, Jana Gana Manga, and the whole thing has also very nice thing. It talks about the Ganga and the Jamuna, and you kind of feel like a sense of, you know, pride. But I don't really feel that anymore. But yeah, there is that, you know, and so we have to feel that. Same thing for what we are given, or for ISKCON. I think in my mind sometimes it would be nice to have a national anthem for ISKCON, you know, where we sing and we feel that pride that we're members of this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This is what Srila Prabhupada has given us, and have great pride in that. We have to understand what that pride is. It is a positive thing and not a negative thing. When it's a negative thing, that means we are thinking we want to dominate, or we want to put others down, or our ISKCON is great, so then your thing is bad, or if you have a false sense of Ishwara Bhava, then we will want to control others, and we would be like King Vena in dominating people. But no, it's about giving protection, about taking responsibility, and in that way we are grateful. It's a feeling of gratitude is there. So that's what Ishwara Bhava is. It's all those qualities, as opposed to controlling in dominating way, or putting somebody down, or putting others down, or we are better than thou kind of feeling. No, not that. No, feeling pride means you take responsibility and feel humble about you, what you are part of, the great thing, whatever you are part of. So this is some thoughts on today's verse. If you have any questions or comments on this particular subject matter. Yes, Sri Devi.
Thank you. So it seems that humility is a very important quality of a Rajarshi and an ideal leader, because they're either going to get corrupted with a lot of power or they're going to be like a humble devotee. So is that something that one is born with?
That's an interesting question you ask. Well, here describes, the verse said swabhava jam. So there's not, it doesn't describe humility, but certain qualities of a kshatriya are there, and for the brahmanas described as swabhava jam, they are inherent in some sense. But yet certain things, like we were hearing Sesha Prabhu giving class, certain things are come through training. Training has to be there. So I think to some extent we can say that certain things are inherent, but certain things have to be cultivated.
I mean, like when Parikshit was born, the brahmanas could read in his chart that, yes, he will be a great king, so already at birth.
Yes.
And also, you know, Prahlad Maharaj is already a devotee in the womb. So it seems like one has to be like born with those qualities.
Certain qualities, and yet certain things, qualities get cultivated in life. Just like life teaches you humility. Life in general teaches you humility. If you have the proper mindset. So yeah, you have to have a certain amount of certain kind of mindset, and then those qualities will, I guess, cultivated. So yes, I think both things are there. Both things are there. Anybody else would like to add to that? To that question? Yes, Pundarik Prabhu. Very important point. Pundarik Prabhu says association is very important.
Mother Bhumi, and he was a great, greatly devoted to the Brahmins in the first part of his life, but by band association he became such a demon. And Prahlad Maharaj says like that, that association is just like a crystal, just whatever comes through that, you get that qualities by your association.
Yes, very, very important point, association. I think Prabhupada talks about like how, you know, when coal rub against each other, it becomes like pressure, and what is it about, they become diamond?
Friction.
Huh? By friction, yeah. And so Prabhupada again has created this ISKCON society, and we come with each other, and believe me, we don't want any kind of problems amongst each other. We don't, but they happen because of we are humans. And when we come amongst each other and we interact with each other in that devotional atmosphere, then humility happens. It comes. By serving together with devotees of good character, that. So it reminds me of something. I hope Mother Mukhe doesn't mind me telling that, but if she does. Sorry, Mother Mukhe. But she was mentioning that, you know, she's a leader, she's our Mukhe, she has to have that propensity of protecting and caring of for everybody here at the temple. And that's why even in such a time, she kept the temples open. Again, of that Ishvara Bhava, wanting to protect, wanting to provide, wanting to care for everybody. And she was telling me that, you know, she knows the older guys, you know, who live around here, they'll come together and blah, 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 something about her and whatever. And, you know, she doesn't mind. She doesn't mind. She knows that they might say, oh, Mother Mukhya this or Mukhya this or that, whatever, you know. And she knows about it, but that doesn't bother her. So that's humility. But it does bother her, and she will take action. And she was telling me about one situation that one of the devotee, one Indian person who has some problem was coming here and every day coming and taking prasadam and taking plates of prasadam, whatever. She doesn't mind. Okay, you come, we give you shelter, take prasadam, go home, whatever. But then this person, he had some Asperger, or I don't know, what one of those things. But he really said some crazy things to one of the devotees here and was saying all kinds of four-letter words and everything. When she heard that, her sense of wanting to protect came out. And it's like, no, you're not going to come here and hurt the devotees and criticize the devotees here. No. So I guess I was making that point of a person who is a leader. He's in service, you become humbled, and you kind of like, okay, whatever qualities I may have, whatever, but that doesn't stop me from doing my service. So you may have to say something about me, that's all right. But I'm going to protect the devotees here. So the same devotees who may say something, no, they are under her charge, and she'll protect them. And she'll give even shelter to others, but to the point where if you're going to hurt somebody, then no. So, talk as far as humility. That's that question, answer. Any other comments or questions anybody has?
There's two online.
Uh-huh.
One comment from Madhurya Leela Mataji. Nice class. Knowing the greatness of one's family and lineage also are a way to help one be responsible for one's actions so as not to humiliate the lineage and family.
Yes, very good. Thank you, Madhurya Leela, for such a nice point. Thank you.
And Diamantini Mataji says, how can one praise the glories and service of the devotees without having it feel hollow or just like flattery?
I think to be specific is always good. So when you're praising somebody, to be specific that, oh, Prabhu, oh, Mataji, I really appreciate this specific thing that you did. So that you're not being hollow. Oh, you're such a nice devotee, oh, you're such in this, and you're such a great leader, or you're such a great whatever. But I think a appreciation of something that you have, that you specifically see in a person is one way to not to be hollow. Anybody has other input in that regard? Divyanga, do you have any kind of input on that regard? How to not
It wouldn't be hollow or false if it was true.
Yeah.
And if you were sincere about it. But I'd like to go back to your other mention of the anthem for ISKCON. It should be Amar Jivan. That would be a good anthem.
Pretty good.
Not to you, I know you have some.
That's pretty good.
What do you think?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
You could all learn something. You have.
Anybody like to add to that? How not to make it hollow? Prithu Maharaj certainly was saying that don't make it hollow. I haven't done anything. So you can see that he's saying, I haven't done anything, so don't praise me. So in other words, when you actually have done something, then praise me. So again, the point being that be specific. What have you done that I really appreciate? I really appreciate that you did such and such. So that makes it not hollow. Okay. If nothing else is there, Hare Krishna. All goes to Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna.